Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the beverage water in a big cup. Anna Karenina, Part 2, Chapter 28. Why was the Emperor displeased? What point was Vronsky trying to make? Vronsky was launching into some kind of a story or anecdote or I don't know. He was trying to make some kind of a point though, wasn't he? But no one was really listening to him. Terrific said, why was the Emperor so displeased? Was he in attendance? If so, the state of his officers. Seeing the supposedly brilliant soldiers, officers of the cavalry, falling off their horses in droves must be displeasing to the commander-in-chief. And what point was Vronsky trying to make? I think you mean Karenin. Oh yeah, I did mean Karenin. Whoops. Yeah. Sorry, my bad. Yeah, I got that completely wrong. I didn't realize until now. But yeah. Okay. I think you mean Karenin, yeah. And his little quip, my race is harder. He's essentially making a statement to himself about his situation. He knows his wife is behaving inappropriately with a young cavalry officer engaged presently in a race, so his wry, ironic wit that only he and we, the readers, can recognize, compares the races for Anna. And Karenin rightfully recognizes that his race to save his marriage is the harder one. The soldier doesn't understand or know this, of course, but just assumes that Karenin has made a clever comment that went over his head. That comment went right over my head too, said Swim, said the mama fishy. I quite like Karenin, said Swim, although I wish he hadn't distanced himself from his son. Anna, not so much. She seems selfish, to wit, said Anna to herself without considering what she really wanted from her husband or what she would have liked him to be, nor did she understand that Karenin's peculiar volubility, which so irritated her, was only an expression of anxiety and unrest within him. I also believe Anna is deluded. I don't see how this is going to end well. Oh yeah, she's deluded. I don't think there's any question about if she's deluded. Like, she's going with the whole, like, my husband is boring and I can't stand the sight of him, and this guy Vronsky is brilliant and I love him so much, right? But here's the thing with people and relationships, is that history repeats, you know? So that's exactly what she's going to do again. And there's this thing that people do with relationships, and not just romantic ones, but any relationship, where they pump people up to these impossible standards and they hold them, you know, on a pedestal. And then they flip it straight on its head, right? So you're either the best thing in the world, the best person ever, or you're the worst and you're insufferable and I can't stand the sight of you, right? And there's no in between. There's no leeway for people to just be people. We've all had that happen to us before, right? Where you go from being someone's absolute favorite person in the whole world to, I can't stand this person. And we've probably all done that to other people. Anna's doing that. I think that's all Anna's doing. It's very selfish. It's very short-sighted. It's very ugly. I don't like it. I am Norwegian, said. He knows everything. He sees everything. So what can he be feeling if he can speak so calmly? If he were to kill me or kill Vronsky, I would respect him. That last part made it easier for me to understand Anna's lack of respect for her husband. He knows, but he does nothing. Anna is at fault, obviously, but Karenin's weak and emasculated response isn't doing him any favours in her eyes, which is a little funny given how terrorised she would feel if Karenin was as persistent as would be respectable. The exchange between Alexei and the general made me laugh. Alexei responds to his joke with a nonsense answer, and the general just goes, haha, quite. Karenin, weak and emasculated, yeah. What's he doing? Why? I don't know, I suppose things were different back then, right? And it's not easy to walk away from a marriage, but I would have walked away from that marriage. I think. I like to think I would. But I don't know, it's hard to say that, isn't it? Because it was so different back then. You didn't leave a marriage. Now divorce is so common that it, you know, it seems as normal as marriage, just about. Altreat, haven't seen your name for a while, Altreat. Altreat said, haven't weighed in here for a while. Well, there you go, that makes sense. Although I am definitely following along and reading, usually a day or so behind everyone else, so it seems a little superfluous to comment. I think the Emperor was displeased because more of his men were unseated than completed the race successfully. And it's just a sport for fun, like Karenin says, something to help sharpen the troops for the real stuff, and yet they still underperformed. I feel bad for Karenin in this chapter. Alright, short and sweet today. Just going to kick on, read you the next chapter. Chapter 29 goes like this. Everyone was loudly expressing disapproval and repeating the words someone had uttered. They will have gladiators and lions next. And everyone was feeling the horror of it, so that when Vronsky fell and Anna gave a loud exclamation, there was nothing remarkable about it. But afterwards a change came over Anna's face, which was positively improper. She quite lost self-control. She began to flutter like a captive bird, now rising to go, now addressing Betsy. Let us go, she said. But Betsy did not hear her. She was leaning over to speak to a general who was below. Karenin approached Anna and politely offered her his arm. Come if you like, he said in French, but Anna listened to what the general was saying and did not notice her husband. He too has a broken leg, they say. It's too bad, the general said. Anna, without replying to her husband, raised her glasses and looked toward the spot where Vronsky had fallen, but it was so far off and so many people had crowded there that it was impossible to distinguish anything. She put down her glasses and was about to go, but at that moment an officer galloped up and reported something to the Emperor. Anna bent forward to listen. Steva, Steva, she called to her brother, but he did not hear. She was again on the point of going. I again offer you my arm if you wish to go, said her husband, touching her arm. With a look of repulsion, she drew back and, without looking at him, replied, No, no, leave me alone. I shall stay here. She now saw an officer running to the running to the grandstand from the place where Vronsky had fallen. Betsy waved her handkerchief to him. The officer brought the news back that the rider was unhurt, but that the horse had broken its back. On hearing this, Anna quickly sat down and hid her face behind her fan. Karenin saw that she was crying and that she was unable to keep back either her tears or her sobs that made her bosom heave. He stepped forward so as to screen her, giving her time to recover. For the third time I offer you my arm, he said, after a while, turning toward her. Anna looked at him and did not know what to say. The Princess Betsy came to her aid. No, Alexis Alandrovich, she put in. I brought Anna here, and I have promised to take her back again. Excuse me, Princess, he said, smiling politely but looking her firmly in the eyes. But I see that Anna is not very well, and I wish her to come with me. Anna looked round with alarm, rose obediently, and put her hand on her husband's arm. I will send to him and find out, and will let you know, Betsy whispered to her. On leaving the stand, Karenin, as usual, spoke to people whom he met, and Anna, as usual, had to reply and make conversation, but she was beside herself and walked as in a dream, holding her husband's arm. Is he hurt or not? Is it true? Will he come or not? Shall I see him tonight? She thought. In silence, she took her place in her husband's carriage, and in silence they drove out of the crowd of vehicles. In spite of all he had seen, Karenin would still not allow himself to think of his wife's real position. He only saw the external sights. He saw that she had behaved with impropriety, and he considered it his duty to tell her so, but it was very difficult for him to say that and nothing more. He opened his mouth to say that she had behaved improperly, but involuntarily said something quite different. After all, how inclined we are all to these cruel spectacles, he said. I notice. What? I do not understand, said Anna contemptuously. He was offended, and at once began to tell her what he wanted to. "I must tell you," he said. "It's coming, the explanation," she thought, and felt frightened. "I must tell you that you behaved improperly today," he said in French. "How did I behave improperly?" she said aloud, quickly turning her head and looking him straight in the eyes, now without any of the former deceptive gaiety, but with a determined air beneath which she had difficulty in hiding the fright she felt. "Don't forget," said he to her, pointing at the open window behind the coachman's box, and slightly rising, he lifted the window. "What did you consider improper?" she asked again. "The despair you were unable to conceal when one of the riders fell." He expected a rejoinder from her, but she remained silent, looking straight before her. "I asked you once before to conduct yourself in society so that evil tongues might be unable to say anything against you. There was a time when I spoke about inner relations. Now I do not speak of them. I speak now of external relations. Your conduct was improper, and I do not wish it to occur again." She did not hear half that he said, but felt afraid of him and wondered whether it was true that Vronsky was not hurt. Was it of him they were speaking when they said that he was not hurt, but the horse had broken its back? She only smiled with simulated irony when he had finished, and she did not reply because she had not heard what he had said. Karenin had begun to speak boldly, but when he realized clearly what he was talking about, the fear she was experiencing communicated itself to him. He saw her smile, and a strange delusion possessed him. "She smiles at my suspicions. In a moment she will tell me what she told them, that these suspicions are groundless and ridiculous." Now that a complete disclosure was impending, he expected nothing so much as that she would, as before, answer him mockingly that his suspicions were ridiculous and groundless. What he knew was so terrible that he was now prepared to believe anything, but the expression of her frightened and gloomy face did not now even promise deception. "Perhaps I am mistaken," said he. "In that case, I beg your pardon." "No, you were not mistaken," she said slowly, looking despairingly into his cold face. "You were not mistaken. I was and cannot help being in despair. I listen to you, but I am thinking of him. I love him. I am his mistress. I cannot endure. I am afraid of you, and I hate you. Do what you like to me." And throwing herself back into the corner of the carriage, she burst into sobs, hiding her face in her hands. Karenin did not move and did not change the direction in which he was looking. But his face suddenly assumed the solemn immobility of the dead, and that expression did not alter till they reached the house. As they were driving up to it, he turned his face to her, still with the same expression, and said, "Yes, but I demand that the external conditions of propriety shall be observed till," his voice trembled, "till I take measures to safeguard my honour and inform you of them." He alighted first and helped her out. In the presence of the servants, he pressed her hand, re-entered the carriage, and drove off toward Petersburg. After he had gone, the Princess Betsy's footman brought Anna a note. "I sent it to Alexis to inquire about his health. He writes that he is safe and sound, but in despair." "Then he will come," thought she. "What a good thing it is that I spoke out." She looked at the clock. She had 3 hours still to wait, and the memory of the incidents of their last meeting fired her blood. "Dear me, how light it is. It is dreadful, but I love to see his face, and I love this fantastic light. My husband, ah, yes. Well, thank heaven that all is over with him." All right, there we go. Another chapter down. Have your say over on the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.